Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 136. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Well, hi diddly ho, neighbor.
How am I even supposed to respond to that?
I don't know.
Regardless, we are back once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We have some new releases to talk about, we have a little bit of news to discuss, and then we have our big topic for the week, which is going to be some discussion about the impending 25th anniversary of the Super Mario Brothers live-action movie. Yes, that's right, that movie, starring Bob Hoskins. However, before we get to that, let's kick things off by discussing a few new releases on Nintendo Switch. First up, just released last week, we have Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition.
Ooh.
Yes, this is obviously the shiny, polished, enhanced version of Hyrule Warriors, the Dynasty Warriors meets Zelda game developed by Koei Tecmo. And just like in previous releases of this game, you get to visit the various Zelda eras, you get to meet lots of recognizable characters and environments, and then kill thousands upon thousands of enemy soldiers and monsters.
Now, Chris, I've been thinking about picking this one up. What do you think?
Well, I like this game quite a bit, and I have played the Wii U version a lot. I have also played the 3DS version, although I don't actually own that one. And Basically, this is just an enhanced, superior, prettier version of those games. Specifically, it's a prettier version of Hyrule Warriors Legends, the 3DS game. So, you know, that means it has all of the newly added features that were in that version. So you can change between characters by pressing a direction on the control pad. In the original, you were just stuck with one character through every battle. But in this version and in the 3DS version, you can switch between multiple characters. And that is super helpful because a lot of the time, you're running around the battlefield, you need to be somewhere else. But sometimes there's like, you know, a bonus objective or something that you want to complete, or maybe you just want to clear out an area of enemies. So you can just switch control to another character and then move them over there and then, you know, switch back and forth as needed. And in fact, you can even command other characters to go places. So like, you know, you're busy, you know, mowing down a legion of enemies, and then you can be like, oh, hey, Impa, go over to this temple where you're supposed to defend the place, and you can have her do that, and she'll move across the map automatically, and then you can just, you know, switch over that character and get the job done. So it really makes things much more efficient, you know, in a way easier, but it's kind of like, you know, the user-friendly type of easiness, not just, you know, direct easier difficulty.
Cool.
Then on top of that, it also adds the My Fairy mode, which lets you customize... It's not as goofy as it sounds. Well, it's a little goofy. It lets you customize a fairy companion by giving it food as well as outfits that enhance its stats, and it gives you magical abilities that can help you out in battle. I haven't been able to use that a whole lot, but it does seem like it's going to be very helpful. I mean, right now my fairy is only like at, you know, level, you know, 2 or 4 or something, but supposedly they can get really powerful and be very, very helpful.
Now, these fairies aren't like 4 stories tall and make crazy woo sounds, do they?
Well, those fairies are definitely in the game, but no, this is a little tiny one that can fit in a bottle, that kind of fairy.
All right, good. Like a, hey, listen!
Yes, they actually do say, hey, listen to you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you do have a fairy companion. Not this fairy companion, but there is a fairy companion named Proxy who follows you around and you know, does Link speaking for him. And I believe she says, hey, listen.
Yep. Nice.
Anyway, all the DLC is also included in this version. However, a lot of that stuff still has to be unlocked. So like when you start the game at the very beginning, only the story mode, which is called Legend mode, is available. You play a little bit of that and then you unlock other modes like Free mode and Adventure mode, which is like this massive series of battles set alongside this classic retro 8-bit Zelda map. Then there's also a challenge mode, a gallery, and you get all that stuff pretty quickly. And also all the story mode characters are available, you know, pretty much, you know, right after you play through your first mission. So characters like Ganondorf and Zant and Ghirahim and Midna are all there pretty quickly.
Cool.
And Linkle is in the game. Linkle, the female Link, for lack of a better explanation, with the worst character name in the history of the Zelda franchise. But yeah, she's in there. Her story episodes are in there, which was not in the Wii U game, I don't believe. I think that was exclusive to the 3DS version. So that's all in there.
That's cool.
But a lot of the other newly added stuff, things that came through DLC, outfits and weapons and characters like the Wind Waker characters or Marin or Tingle. Those are all locked away. You have to play adventure mode to get that stuff, and doing so seems like it can be quite a process.
Now, I saw Rabio is in there too.
Yes, yes, he is one of the characters that I don't have access to yet. I'm not sure when I will get to him. But, cool. You know, there are lots of adventure mode maps, and they are not locked. However, the challenge that you encounter when you play through those adventure mode maps is pretty high, so you probably won't get very far unless you level up your characters in other modes. And so the good side of this is that the game has tons of replay value. Like, you can sink hundreds of hours into this game. I have a friend who's played like 200 hours or something of the 3DS version, wow. And they've gone through like every mode, all the adventure maps, unlocking everything. And, you know, then, you know, your character stats, you know, carry over from mode to mode. And, you know, if you are only playing this, you know, that's a great thing because you can get so much value for your money. However, if you actually want to play other games and experience other things, it'd be like, oh man, why is this stuff all locked behind, you know, these pretty challenging quests? From where I'm coming from, you know, I've played through the Wii U game. I bought like half the DLC for it. And so I kind of want to be able to get to the new stuff right away, but that is not happening. I'm probably going to have to spend a lot of time playing through a bunch of this content to get to the stuff I have not experienced before.
And how do you feel about that?
You know, a little gypped. You know, I'm paying all over for the game again, and a lot of that was because I wanted to get access to this content that I haven't played, but, you know, now it's kind of locked behind these hours and hours I'm going to have to invest into the game. So, you know, I understand why they do it that way, but for me personally, it would have been nicer if you could just get access to it from the get-go like you do if you had actually, you know, bought the DLC for the games originally. On the plus side, I will say it's nice that, you know, some of the brand new content, the Era of the Wild's tunic for Link and the Era of the Wild's outfit for Zelda, are both available pretty much from the beginning, so you can outfit your characters in those attires at least without doing anything to unlock them. But yeah, a lot of that stuff, it's like, when am I ever going to get to this? I've already spent a lot of time with this game. Am I going to spend the time necessary to get to all this new stuff? Who knows? Hopefully I will eventually, because it is really, really fun. I mean, that's the bottom line, is this game is very, very fun. You know, I got back into it and I'm like, you know, I played all this before, but I'm still really, really enjoying it.
Right. Have you found any wild cuckoos?
Oh, they're wild cuckoos, man. They are all over the place. In one of the first adventure mode maps, if you accidentally attack this cuckoo, follows you around, the cuckoos will go absolutely crazy and they will just beat the crap out of you. But, you know, one of the things about this game is that you have these armies that are following you around, and for the most part, they don't really do anything. The AI is pretty dumb, and I mean, that's kind of good because you want to be the person doing all the action. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is that when you are playing Linkle's story, her army, the army that follows her around, is all cuckoos. She doesn't have like an army of soldiers or knights. It's cuckoos. So you take over an enemy outpost and cuckoos, you know, they're the ones that show up and hold down the fort for you.
Wow.
So yes, there are lots of cuckoos. If you like cuckoos, you will definitely like this game.
Now, is this game pretty?
I'd say so. I mean, it looks pretty much exactly the same as the Wii U version. Obviously, it looks a lot nicer than the 3DS version. Doesn't have any, you know, slowdown frame rate issues or the extreme pop-up that that version does. I would say it looks pretty darn good, but really not any better than what was on Wii U.
All right. Fair.
Anyway, overall, it's really fun. Like I said, I wish I had more immediate access to some of the content I haven't experienced before. But still, it is a really good game. If you have not played it before in any shape or form, I definitely recommend picking it up. I really like this. I also really like Fire Emblem Warriors. You know, which one is better? You know, originally I was going to say I liked Fire Emblem Warriors better because I feel like that motif fits this style of gameplay better, but there's just so much great Zelda fan service, and I love the Zelda universe, and I love the characters, and I love the worlds, so it's kind of a toss-up, you know, like, which world do you like better? You know, maybe I am sliding back to liking Hyrule Warriors better, I don't know. But yeah, if you are sort of on the fence about this, I would say go for it. Pick this up, add to the collection, if you don't have it in the previous form especially. It's good.
All right, I have one final question.
All right, go ahead.
Are there any, you know, sort of storylines that tie into the Zelda world at all, or is there dialogue? How does that work?
Well, there are definitely story scenes between all the action, and yes, it does sort of tie together a whole bunch of different Zelda titles. I mean, I don't want to give away too much of the story, but there is an excuse made for why you are traveling to these different Zelda eras and sort of going to the realm of Twilight or the realm of Ocarina of Time, and it sort of, you know, makes some sort of attempt to bring those all together. So those are all there. It is sort of explained. Is it a great story, a compelling story? Not really, but it's a good enough excuse to just have all your favorite Zelda elements all in one game, and that's good enough for me.
All right, cool. I want to check it out.
Yeah, you totally should.
Will you buy it for me?
No, sorry.
Okay.
Moving along then to another title I've been playing. That is Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 and 2.
Nice.
This is, of course, 10 Mega Man games, all on Switch in one or possibly two convenient packages. I picked up the physical edition, which includes Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 on a game card, and then you get a code for Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, and of course still have to download it, which took kind of a shockingly long time, in my opinion. And you also get a little bit of a bonus in the form of a cleaning cloth with a nifty Mega Man image. It's kind of too bad there wasn't more of a bonus item for getting the physical collection, but hey, I'll take what I can get as a Mega Man fan, I guess. Anyway, Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 is 6 awesome games, Mega Man 1 through 6 from the NES. They are just as fun as ever. So far, I haven't encountered any problems with the emulation, haven't noticed any slowdown, any audio glitches, or anything like the issues that plagued the 3DS version of Legacy Collection. Just lots and lots of shooting and platforming and deadly spikes and disappearing blocks and stealing boss weapons and fantastic level designs. And, you know, I started playing this game like, okay, I don't have a lot of time to play it, so I'm just going to play like a level or two from each game to get a feel of what it's like. And of course, I'm like halfway through the game and I'm like, oh, come on, I have to do something else. It's lunchtime. But yeah. So they are obviously just as fun as they've ever been. Both the Japanese and the US versions are included, so you can play it as Mega Man or you can play it as Rockman if you'd like. It also has some cool bonus features like the inclusion of Rapid Fire Turbo. If you want to assign that to a button to shoot as fast as you can do that. There's also lots of bonus content in the form of art and music, and lots of screen options like borders and filters and screen size adjustment.
Yeah, I saw some screenshots. The presentation looks pretty good.
Yeah, you really can't fault them at all when it comes to that. You know, for a retro game collection like this, this is, you know, about as good as I can imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
It also has control configuration options, challenge mode where they have, you know, different parts of levels stitched together or like beating several bosses in a row or things like that. Oh, and speaking of the bonus challenges, there are still some that are unlocked away behind an amiibo, but unlike in the 3DS game, you only have to scan the amiibo once. You don't have to do it every time you play the game.
Ooh.
Which is very, very convenient.
Nice.
So yeah, lots of great stuff in there.
Now, Chris, obviously this isn't the first Mega Man collection ever.
No.
How does this stack up to the other ones?
Well, the thing I remember most about Mega Man Anniversary Collection, which was really the last big one to come out, that was on GameCube, and in that one, they reversed the jump and shoot buttons. I do not know why, but they switched them around. And for someone who knows Mega Man backwards and forwards, trying to do that with the reverse button controls was insane. It's like, you know, if they reverse gas and brake on your car, it's probably not going to work out very well. So, yeah, as far as that goes especially, this is a huge step forward. Plus, just the presentation is way, way better as well. So, yeah, it's much better than previous collections we've had on Nintendo systems. And like I said, a lot of the problems of the 3DS version have been fixed as well. So, yeah, definitely good. Definitely, you know, still worthwhile getting, even if you still have your GameCube hooked up or whatever.
That's funny. I think I remember when you did buy that game and you being very, very frustrated.
I think it was just a little bit before I joined Nintendo Power, but there's a very good chance I was still ranting about it months later, so it's very possible.
Yeah. And you didn't have the option of switching buttons either, remapping the controller.
No, you couldn't. And this one you totally can. You can remap it and do all kinds of control configuration things, whatever tickles your fancy.
Cool beans.
And then we have the Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, which includes 4 great games plus all the DLC. This is the first time they've been collected all together on a Nintendo system. And, you know, this is the first time that Mega Man 8 has been on a Nintendo system since the aforementioned Anniversary Collection that came out, like, you know, 15 years ago. So it's good to be able to play that again. And, you know, I think both Mega Man 8 and Mega Man 7 are definitely underrated. They sometimes get a bad rap for, you know, sort of looking different and feeling different than all the other Mega Man games, but I would say they are still totally fun. Now, one thing that's in the first Mega Man Legacy Collection, but not the second, is a rewind function. Mm-hmm. So if you are the kind of player who, you know, doesn't really, you know, care about learning the patterns and stuff, you can just abuse the heck out of that rewind function on Mega Man 1 through 6. And be like, oh, I fell in a pit. Rewind. Oh, that boss hit me. Rewind. Just, you know, totally, you know, break the game that way. If you want to do that, that's up to you. That is not in Legacy Collection 2, but what is in there is something they call Armor Mode, which basically halves your damage for all four games. And that is actually, you know, super cool to have in there, because I remember, you know, Mega Man 7 was super, super hard. You know, I remember playing that for hours way back in the day. And Mega Man 9 was also really hard. I only beat that game once, and I was like, oh, geez, I just got through here by the skin of my teeth. So it's very nice they have that option in there, since there is no other, you know, difficulty adjustment you can do for Mega Man 9. So definitely appreciated that those are both in there. Makes the games way more accessible.
Nice.
Of course, Legacy Collection 2 also has all your requisite control options, turbo fire, screen options, and tons of extras. So yes, they are absolutely both jam-packed with Mega Man goodness. As a big Mega Man fan, I could not be happier to have them on Switch and have immediate access to all these games. And as I was indicating before, they are just as fun as they have ever been. So I'm very happy with these purchases.
Cool. You're definitely making a strong case for it.
All right. You think you're going to pick them up?
You know, I might pick up the first one. I don't think I'll be picking up the second one.
Well, if you're only going to get one, that would be the one to get.
I was going to say, sorry, Mega Man 7 and 8.
Well, I guess you wouldn't be my nemesis if you were all in on the Mega Man, would you?
I certainly wouldn't. Now, Chris, I got a wild card question for you. Ready?
Okay, go for it.
If you could make an amiibo after one character in Mega Man that's not already currently an amiibo, what would it be?
Oh, just one?
Yep.
Well, if it's going to be only one, I think I would go with Dr. Wily. Because we got a Mega Man amiibo. We do not have a villain yet. And if you're going to have a villain, you might as well go with Dr. Wily. I mean, you could say Forte. Sorry, Bass. His name is Bass, not Forte in the U.S. But actually, I kind of like the idea now. Maybe if it was Bass and Treble, that's his dog. That was the equivalent to Rush. Yeah, they could do a really cool amiibo of Bass and Treble, so that would be cool. So either him or Dr. Wily, yeah.
All right, cool. Would Dr. Wily have a real mustache?
With, like, real flocking?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Nice. I'll
definitely put it over the top.
Day one purchase.
All right, let us move along then to some recent Nintendo-related news. So, a few days ago, Nintendo made the announcement that they'll be publishing for Switch a port of the Wii game from Bandai Namco, Go Vacation.
Wow.
Do you remember this game from the Wii era, Pete?
Oh, I certainly do. Not very well, but I definitely remember it existing.
You know, I can't even remember if I played it. I mean, I certainly knew about it as well. And, you know, it's basically a Wii Sports Resort knockoff, but it has a lot more variety in its content. I don't know if I actually played it, though.
No?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. We might have played it in multiplayer mode at NP, but I know that I wasn't the one to write about it. Anyway, it does seem to have a lot of content. There are, you know, several sections to this resort in the game. There's a marine resort, a snow resort, a mountain resort, a city resort, and then there are a whole bunch of different sports activities you can play, like skydiving, volleyball, tennis, surfing, kayaking, skateboarding, jet skiing, dog sledding, horseback riding. Apparently there's even, like, you know, real automobile racing, and the cars look like they're lifted around a Ridge Racer or something, which is kind of cool. But the thing I remember the most about the game is that it has a pie throwing contest minigame.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that one too.
And while I do feel like it is, you know, a sad day when pies are just being wasted by being, you know, thrown at people's faces instead of being eaten, there is something that's, you know, mildly or possibly wildly amusing about, you know, dodging a pie in slow motion Matrix style.
Mm-hmm.
So aside from that, you play with animals, you know, you decorate your home, you explore the island, And, you know, like the Wii original, it uses motion controls. So you know, disconnect your Joy-Cons, and I guess you swing and waggle your way to victory.
How long have you been waiting to say that?
About 6 seconds.
You know, this is an interesting partnership because, you know, Nintendo and Namco Bandai, Bandai Namco, depending on where you live.
It's all Bandai Namco now.
Supposedly, you know, they're a little bit in cahoots right now with a little rumor swirling that they might be working on the next Metroid or at least some other game.
Well, that's true. And they also collaborated on Smash Brothers. So
that's correct.
You know, it's not like this partnership is new. But it is, you know, pretty weird that, you know, they would just pull out this old game out of their back catalog and be like, okay, now Nintendo is publishing this. Couldn't they publish it themselves? And why didn't Nintendo just, you know, make their own port of, you know, Wii Sports Resort or something? It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think in some ways it does make sense, though. I've heard some people say, you know, there's not a lot of good multiplayer games for people that aren't, like, super big gamers besides, like, let's say Mario Kart. So I think there is a market for this. You know, there are people that, they've been playing snipper clips over and over and they've been waiting for something else.
Yeah, I suppose, possibly. I mean, I guess if they're going to publish a super casual game of this nature, you know, better to port something from Bandai Namco than, you know, spend a whole bunch of new resources making something brand new when they could be investing those resources on, you know, actual gamer-focused titles that the core audience would be excited about. But, yeah, it is still, you know, it's kind of bizarre. Also, I'm really not sure about the price. It is $50. It's a pretty much full-priced game. And to me, I'm thinking, you know, this game came out back in, I think, 2011. I feel like this is where it should be, like, you know, downloadable only, you know, Wii Virtual Console. You know, get it for $20 at most. But yeah, you said $50? I mean, I've been complaining about having to pay full price for Wii U ports,
right,
and now we're having to pay full price for a Wii game. I mean, I should say it's not just a Wii game. Obviously, it's now in HD, and it does have a few new features, like, you know, it has new fishing areas, if you're into that sort of thing, and animals to photograph, and, quote, find boxes filled with rewards dropped by a plane. It has literal loot boxes. They don't cost anything, apparently.
That's usually how cocaine arrives, too, but...
That is not the kind of snow resort I was talking about. But anyway, I just feel like, you know, this price point for a game like this, you know, that's nuts. I mean, if Capcom had asked me to pay full price for, you know, these Mega Man games, well, I probably still would have done it, but I would have been upset about it. But, you know, I'm getting these Mega Man games for, you know, basically, you know, $5 a pop or less.
Right.
And, you know, here we're being asked to pay, you know, full price for this, you know, sort of old game that doesn't seem to have a lot of new stuff added in. So I'm thinking this is, you know, sort of a very iffy proposition here.
Yeah, the price point is a little funky. But, you know, if you look at it for four players, each person's only paying $12.50. So that's not too bad.
Well, I guess if you can get, you know, three friends to go in and split it with you.
I'm totally kidding. That's horrible.
Anyway, if this sort of thing does float your boat, you'll be happy to know it is coming out on July 27th.
Hey, why don't you go vacation?
Well, you go vacation. I was vacationing. We took a couple weeks off, you know. Moving along then to something completely different. The folks at Xseed have announced that a new music game called Gal Metal is coming to Switch. As the name implies, it is about an all-female band. It's got some crazy-looking cel-shaded graphics. And judging from the trailer, you rock out in outer space to defend Earth from space octopuses.
Wow, like a normal Sunday.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. Yeah, according to the press release, players create their own drum lines based on over a dozen beats, and I have no idea what that means. I have no idea how that translates into gameplay. And then in addition to performing music, you also perform part-time jobs, hang out with friends, and jam in the club room. They are also promising plentiful manga-style cutscenes. So there's going to be a lot of story elements in this game, not just music-based gameplay. It certainly sounds very bizarre, but I'm intrigued. I am quite intrigued.
Yeah, me too. The screenshots look pretty good.
Yeah, and Xseed, you know, they usually publish pretty good stuff. They have their eye open for quality that might not make it to the U.S. otherwise. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to finding more about this game. It is coming out in the fall of this year, 2018.
So far, this is the best name of 2018.
If you say so. There was some interesting news out of Japan. Very unexpected. apparently Resident Evil 7 is on its way to Switch.
Yeah.
Did you follow the story, Pete?
Yeah, and that is a really weird thing to hear.
Yes, yes it is. And even weirder than the game coming to Switch, because, I mean, that isn't so weird in and of itself. Mm-mm. But right now, it's Japan only, and it's not running on the Switch hardware. It is a cloud-based streaming game, and I think it's supposed to be out, like, today or something in Japan.
So weird.
They just announced this thing out of nowhere. Here it is.
Yeah, that's kind of unbelievable, right?
Yeah, it's really odd. And, you know, how is it going to play? You know, if you have a connection problem, if your connection is just a little bit off, you know, you might have trouble with the game loading properly. And, of course, you know, Switch is a console portable hybrid. You're not really going to be able to play this game portably, which would be, you know, one of the big parts of the appeal of playing it on Switch.
Yeah, no kidding. Although, I guess the one saving grace is that the price point's kind of funky. Have you heard about this?
Yes. Yes, I have. That's another thing that's very bizarre about it. It's only 2,000 yen to get the game, but you're not actually buying the game. You're just renting the game for 180 days. So you do not own this thing at all. You're renting it. You're streaming it. There's nothing physical. You don't own it. It's going away if you don't re-up after that time. It's just odd.
Yeah, it's a really strange model, but apparently there have been a couple other games that have followed that same sort of pricing structure in Japan.
Hmm.
Maybe not for Switch, but just in general.
Huh. I don't think I knew that. I know PlayStation Now has a similar setup of renting and streaming, but I wasn't aware of anything quite like this.
Yeah, I do wonder how it controls. Like, is the latency all there? I mean...
Right, right.
From what I understand, you know, the Switch screen isn't too bad to, like, stream it to. It, you know, you don't need to have the highest bandwidth feed. It's not like 4K or something like that.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
But I think that the big concern would be controls and does it react, you know, how you
right.
want it and... You know, with mm-hmm. a game like Resident Evil, you kind of need to be on your game and
yeah.
things are jumping out at you. And I'm imagining you throwing your console across the room if the right zombie jumped out and scared you.
That has never happened, but once when I was playing the PT demo on PlayStation 4, I almost literally flipped backwards over my sofa.
I've only seen that in 80s video game commercials.
That was a fun day. I mean, obviously, the good side is, you know, it lets the game look way better than it would, theoretically, running natively on the Switch hardware.
Oh, right.
So if they can pull this off and they can make it work and there's no latency or lag and it loads properly and it controls well, it's like, oh, wow, you can put a game on Switch that really shouldn't be running on this here and surpasses the power of the hardware. So that is kind of exciting. I'm very, you know, cautious, though, about how it's actually going to work out.
Yeah, curious to see what the reviews are when it comes available and people start looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, it should be available any day now, so let's keep our eyes open and our ears out and you know, find out what people are saying.
Yeah, I'm also assuming this one probably doesn't make it out west, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? If it you know really takes off, yeah, it's possible. It could happen. The last bit of news I wanted to mention is that I saw Nintendo had released a new trailer for Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle DLC, the Donkey Kong Adventure.
Oh.
Did you see this, Pete?
I haven't. Is it cool?
It is pretty cool. You know, I don't actually own this game yet, but I enjoy what I played. And judging from this trailer, this new add-on is going to be really, really fun. It shows Donkey Kong teaming up with a cranky rabbit, I believe, as well as a peach rabbit, and they fight off Rabbid Kong using all sorts of new powers. DK has a banana boomerang. It just looks fun and crazy and kooky, and they say it's coming out this spring, and spring is only a couple more weeks, so that means it's going to be here pretty darn soon.
Yeah, it's cool. It's great to see them supporting this game still. I think this game has really had long legs for Ubisoft, and it's exciting to see what they'll do.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was announced quite a while back, but we just didn't know the details. But anyway, it's good to see it coming, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm actually watching a video for it right now, and it looks great.
Yeah, are you going to pick it up?
You know, I have been looking for a reason to go back to that game, and this might be the reason.
All right, cool. Good to know. If you pick it up, I'd be glad to hear what you think.
Yeah, wow, one of the rabbits looks like King Hippo.
Very nice. All right, let us move along then to some listener mail. It's been a while since we've answered letters here on the show, so we've got some comments from a few episodes back. We got some notes on the Perfect Tens episode from a few weeks ago. As expected, it was a somewhat controversial topic, and people had their own opinions to share on what they would give a 10, but let's get into this.
Yeah, a lot of people have strong opinions about what they give their 10s.
This first letter comes from listener C, and he writes, "Nice episode, but I can't believe you didn't have any picks on GBA or DS, not to mention Wii U. I'll limit myself to just a few. GBA, Advance Wars without a doubt, Rhythm Tengoku, and one of the Fire Emblem games, probably Sacred Stones for me. And on DS, Elite Beat Agents, so fun and innovative. And at least one of the art style games, maybe Box Life. On Wii U, Splatoon was a game changer and is amazing, and Pikmin 3 wasn't hugely innovative, but was, like Melee, the pinnacle of the Pikmin series. Also have to slip in mentions of Tetris Attack on Yoshi's Island on Super NES, Wario Land 3 on Game Boy Color, Majora's Mask on N64, and F-Zero GX on GameCube. You also skipped over 3DS, although I don't have any games that would quite make the cut on my list either."
Well, Chris, you know, he's got a lot of good points there, but I will say, these are 10s, you know, you can't just dole them out like they're candy.
You can't, that's true. I totally agree with you there. But, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, so, you know, I'm not going to knock him for any of these, except maybe F-Zero GX. I really couldn't stand that game.
The cutscenes are almost worth the price of admission alone.
The cutscenes are very good. I will say, though, you know, after doing that list, I did reconsider a few things, and on 3DS, I completely forgot to mention The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds. I'm not saying for sure I'd give it a 10, but it's very, very close. I mean, that was a game where I never expected that it could ever live up to A Link to the Past, because that's pretty much my all-time favorite game. But this game showed up, and it was like, wow, this is pretty much almost just as good as the original. So I would very much consider giving that a 10 for sure. But yeah, a lot of these other games are great. You know, I love Elite Beat Agents. Obviously, Splatoon is indeed a game changer. Yeah, good stuff here.
Yep, nothing I would really argue with here. Even like the shout out for Box Life. Big fan.
Our next letter comes from listener Joey T. And Pete, he requested that you read this one, not me.
Wow, I'm honored.
Take it away, Whisker Biscuit.
Thanks for defending my childhood, Pete. I don't know why Hoff likes to jam a stick into the spokes of the N64 every time it's brought up, but the N64 has lots of 10s. Mario Kart 64, Super Smash Bros. 64, Perfect Dark, Resident Evil 2, Conker's Bad Fur Day, Mario Party 2, Majora's Mask, Mario Tennis, and I think the three of you guys brought up Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, GoldenEye as 10s as well. Also, Smash 4 is a 10, and Breath of the Wild came out on Wii U as well.
Personally, I like to think of it more as pooping in his Cheerios rather than putting a stick in the spokes, but everyone's entitled to their opinions. Mm-hmm. I love Conker's Bad Fur Day, and I'd give it high marks, and Mario Kart 64 is my favorite in the series until MK8 came out, but on the other hand, I feel like Smash 64 was basically a prototype for bigger and better things, and I'd never give Majora's Mask a 10 because I find the repetition exhausting. But if Joey loves them, that's fine by me.
Yeah, I got your back, Joey. But I am going to question Resident Evil 2 on N64, but no worries.
Okay, the next letter comes from Gabriel Van Gilder, who writes, "The deserved 10 of 10 that NP and Game Informer gave Wind Waker comes to mind. Also, Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy VI, and Chrono Trigger. I thought the HD version of Twilight Princess brought it up to a 10 with its great new graphics. Also, Ocarina of Time."
Well, I forgot, Chris. I gave Wind Waker a 10, I believe, and you said no, because of the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, I will defend Twilight Princess and Wind Waker till the ends of the earth. I love both of those games. I just wouldn't give those 10s, personally. Mm-hmm. But again, to each their own. Moving on to the next letter, this one comes from Brian Booth, who writes, "I enjoyed listening to all of your perfect 10s. I don't recall now if you mentioned Chrono Trigger, but that would definitely be on my list. And what about Super Mario RPG? At first, I was surprised that you didn't mention any DS, GBA, 3DS, or Wii U games, but on further reflection, I couldn't remember anything that really stood out, so maybe there were a lot of really good games, but none that quite measured up to the ones you honored on the show. I actually skipped the GameCube, so I don't have much of a dog in that fight, but I've heard great things about Resident Evil 4 and Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door. Any reason you didn't give those a nod?" Brian asks a very good question. Those are two very good games. Resident Evil 4, certainly some of our NP colleagues absolutely would have given that a 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, some of the stuff just sort of comes down to like this it factor. Like, you know, a game can, you know, hit all the right marks on paper, But, you know, for you, does it have that it factor? Does it just, you know, have that little extra, you know, special spark that pushes it into 10 territory? You know, for a lot of people, Resident Evil 4 does, and Paper Mario Thousand Year Door would too. For me, neither of them did. I'm not, like, the biggest Resident Evil fan. But, yeah, I could totally see either of those games getting it. And, you know, probably the same with Super Mario RPG. Again, Super Mario RPG is something I'd probably give, like, a 9.5 to. Would I give it a 10? I don't know. But, yeah, there's not, like, any reason that we left it off or anything like that.
Yeah, I think you kind of hate it.
What?
I'm totally teasing. You know, I think it is my bad. I meant to include Resident Evil 4. I think it's partially because it got so many 10s. I kind of just thought, it doesn't need to be called out here. But it is one of the first over-the-shoulder, third-person action games that really kind of set the tone for many genres going forward, as you can see over the last probably 10, 15 years.
Yeah, it was very revolutionary in a lot of ways. But on top of that, it was just, you know, a high-quality game. And at the time, you know, a GameCube exclusive, so it really, really stood out. Like I said, it's beloved for a lot of good reasons.
If you'd allow me to, I would like to give it a 10 now.
All right. If you insist, Pete.
Thanks.
Our next letter comes, once again, from Just Joey T, who writes, "Are you guys content or disappointed with the details of the Nintendo Online service? And when Nintendo fans voice their concerns on social media and message boards about this service, do you think they are just complaining, or Nintendo will actually listen to the feedback and consider what fans want? As for me, a lack of messaging and constrained parties will be disappointing. I am very torn about subscribing." Obviously, we talked about this last week, Pete. Anything to add over our discussion from then?
You know, I do think that for the first time in a long time, Nintendo probably is listening a bit more than they ever have. So I do think that, you know, being on social media and using message boards is actually advantageous. Not saying to go wild and start petitions or anything like that, because those don't work. But but to just in general, if Nintendo knows that what they're doing is working, or if what they're doing is very lacking, I think it is something that gets measured and paid attention to more so than it probably ever has.
I think that's probably fair to say. I think they are definitely listening more than they ever did in the past. I think in this case, they're just going to let things play out. They'll be paying attention, but, you know, they'll see how it goes. If people, you know, sign up and really enjoy this thing when it comes out, then, you know, I think that's all the confirmation they need that they made the right choices. But, you know, for now, I think it is good to get those complaints out there, make them heard, and perhaps Nintendo will address them if they discover that, you know, the service is not performing up to their standards. But I guess that remains to be seen. It certainly is, you know, kind of disappointing that there is no built-in messaging, and it seems like the party system could be better. But, you know, for only $20, I do kind of feel like they will probably be giving me my money's worth.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, I think that I have to wait and see. It's like, I'm going to spend the money, I'm going to have it. We'll see in the first year what they introduce.
Right.
I assume that there will be some more features coming on the pipeline. So we'll see. $20 is a pretty low entry price, though. So, you know, can't be too upset as long as they get this part right.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. It might not be delivering everything we want, but it very well might be giving us our money's worth.
Cool.
Got another letter here. This one comes from 138-bit. He writes, "Would you like to see Nintendo release a mini arcade cabinet as part of the classics line? The older stuff wouldn't sell well as an arcade archive, but would be fun to get as part of the mini classics system line." Pete, what do you think about this suggestion?
I mean, I actually think it's really cool. You know, we were talking recently about the Hallmark ornament that kind of had like Donkey Kong on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it actually plays on there, but
it doesn't. But
just the fact that exists. Now it'd have to be bigger than that, at least. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if Nintendo were to somehow release something like even along the size of their old, you know, they released those little like LCD arcade, tiny, like maybe a foot tall by 6 inches wide. If you remember that, like they had like Donkey Kong on it and stuff, Chris.
Oh, from way back in the day? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so if they did something like that, absolutely. I could totally see this being something that people would buy. I don't think it would have, you know, maybe the high demand the way the NES did and the SNES did.
Right.
But I do think that there would be people that would be very interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think they could do something cool along these lines. There would be a lot of challenges, one being, like you said, Pete, there wouldn't be quite the same level of interest. The other thing being, you know, with the NES and the Super NES, everything was customized to work with that hardware. If you're doing an arcade-based thing, a lot of them had different controls depending on what the game was. And then, you know, would you be playing it on the little screen or would you be playing it on your TV? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would it look like? Would it just look like, you know, one of those particular arcade games, or would it just be sort of a generic arcade look? They could definitely do something cool with that, though. I think he's got an interesting point, and there could be something fun there for sure.
Yeah, on a side note, I wish that Nintendo's current arcade games that they released, like Mario Kart, were somehow available on Switch, but that's a whole nother conversation.
The last letter for this week comes from Jody Anthony, who writes, "Just listen to the Smash episode. With the Virtual Console ending, I think we need a representative. Who has been there since the beginning of the Virtual Console? Who even got a 3DS 3D port? That's right. The Urban Champion. Hashtag Urban Champion for Smash."
Ooh, that's so gross.
Well, you know, on the one hand, I kind of agree with a little bit of this, because as I kept pointing out, it's nice to have actual, you know, people who fight in your fighting game. So from that perspective, I kind of like the idea. On the other hand, Urban Champion is terrible, so I'm not super keen on that game getting a representative at all. But the notion of having the Urban Champion, or Green Pants Guy, or whatever his real name is, in Smash Brothers certainly amuses me to no end.
I think he later became Fighter Hayabusa.
I do not think so. This is blatant and dirty, filthy lie. But he did get punched and fall down a manhole, so that's, you know, something for a claim to fame.
That's true. Chris, on a side note, I think at some point we should do an episode where we talk about Nintendo's worst games of all time.
Huh, what would ever prompt you to think of that? Okay, that takes care of the letters for this episode. Let's take a little intermission, and then we come back. We will discuss the 25th anniversary of the live-action Super Mario Brothers movie. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is a discussion of the 25th anniversary of the Super Mario Brothers live-action movie.
Ooh.
That's right. It has been 2.5 decades since this film blasted into theaters, starring Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo, and Dennis Hopper. And according to the DVD cover I'm holding in my hand, this ain't no game. It's a live-action thrill ride. So, of course, Pete, we sat down a couple days ago. We watched through this movie, and we will be publishing here on Power Pros feature-length commentary for the film. But while we were doing that, we didn't really, you know, get into a discussion of, you know, the quality of the movie or the legacy of the movie or, you know, really, you know, discussing what it was all about. It was more of the moment-to-moment discussion of what was happening on screen, and of course me having way too much milk to drink. So after watching this again, I know it had been a long time for you. You said you hadn't seen it since you were a teenager. You know, what are your thoughts 25 years later of the Super Mario Brothers movie? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it somewhere in the middle? What do you think of this fine film?
Well, Chris, I wouldn't say it's probably the worst movie ever made, because that's just it's got far too much.
Well, that is high praise. That should be on the back of the box. Not the worst movie ever made.
But it's certainly not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. In some ways, you have to give it so much credit because it tries to be a lot of things, and there's some really elaborate set pieces, and there's some really funky, whimsical ideas. And, you know, there's probably like 2,000 extras in the movie, at least it seems like, between all the Mushroom Kingdom scenes and police station. Maybe not 2,000, but...
Well, it certainly did try a lot of things. You're not wrong about that. But it didn't really seem that one of those was trying to be faithful to the Super Mario Brothers property.
Correct. I mean, if you're asking me just if this movie's good, I have to say no. Now, there's whole other reasons why you can go into why that is. But you're right. It's like, it varies so wildly from the source material. You almost wonder how it even happened.
Yeah, exactly. I like what you were saying there. You know, it is a different question. Is it faithful to the source material versus is it actually a good movie? And you know, the reason that it's probably not, I would say it's not a good movie. I would still say it's a bad movie. You know, but taking Mario out of the equation, why is it a bad movie? Well, it's just because the story is dull, the characters are unappealing, the world is too bizarre for its own good, etc., etc. But when it comes to, you know, the source material, that is sort of an issue. That is one of the ways in which I feel like things just kind of went off the rails.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many scenes I can think of in that movie that are just like the weirdest things I've ever seen. Like, why are they talking to a slime king?
Well, because the king got turned into slime. I mean, that is the plot of the movie, but... is that King Koopa will devolve people into their primordial forms, which is either a dinosaur or a monkey or, in his case, slime. I mean, that's what they set up at the very beginning, is that, you know, this is a different world where, you know, humans evolved from dinosaurs. That's what Homer Simpson sets up for us.
It's true. But then you got, you know, Bertha as a large black woman who can jump around. You got cops that are wearing leather that look straight out of like a S&M party.
Yes. I mean, and that's getting to, you know, one of my biggest issues of it, you know, not being very Mario-esque at all. And I feel like the one thing I saw in the entire movie that tells you how wrong it was for trying to be a Mario movie is when you see a billboard in the background for, I think it says, "I was a teenage mammal, triple X." Like, there's a triple X movie billboard in the background of a Mario movie. Like, could you ever imagine, you know, playing Mario Odyssey and seeing a triple X movie sign in the background? It is just so far off brand to have anything like that anywhere remotely near Mario. It's just mind-blowing. It's pretty much inconceivable. And it tells you, you know, pretty much everything you need to know about how disconnected this movie is from the world of Mario.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was not based on Mario, it'd still be one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, Yoshi's a real dinosaur, like not even cute.
Well, again, you know, that's more of the Mario aspect than the bad movie overall aspect. I mean, the bad movie overall aspect, I think it goes into a lot of things. It goes into, you know, the pretty crummy special effects. It goes into the weird characterizations of both the good guys and the bad guys. And just this whole, you know, world setup is just, you know, I find it to be unappealing.
With the Mario franchise just being, you know, so epic and being so iconic, it's just really frustrating to see that they did almost nothing with the brand.
Right.
And I mean, you up until like the last maybe, I don't know, was it hour or 45 minutes? They're not even wearing their colors. Mm-hmm. They really, it just doesn't make sense. It just, across the board, you're scratching your head.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like the people who are behind making this movie really either didn't get the property, they didn't understand what it was, or they just didn't want to make something based on, you know, truly what Super Mario Brothers was all about. I mean, it would have been really hard, I think, to make something that was any good at that time, considering. I mean, you know, special effects. I mean, there were some really great special effects at that time. I mean, this was, you know, still post Terminator 2 and things like that. And Jurassic Park came out only the next year. But obviously, from the effects we saw in this movie, they did not have much of a budget for their special effects. So it would have been hard to make compelling looking, you know, actual Goombas or Koopalings or a believable, you know, spiky turtle Bowser walking around.
Now, they were more like special defects.
Yes. So it would have been, you know, very, very difficult, I think, to make something that was, you know, whimsical and colorful and compelling, you know, back at that time with the money they had available to them. But that's really probably what they should have tried. They should have, you know, been doing something that was more like a modern Wizard of Oz type fantasy if they were going to try to do this sort of thing. But instead of, you know, going down a colorful yellow brick road, it's just this dark, gritty, brooding S&M, spikes, triple X movies, cyberpunk, Dino Hatton, Monstropolis thing going on.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper with a 3 foot long tongue.
Yeah, and his crazy cornrows. And the thing that I brought up in our commentary is that it just kind of seems like, because they didn't get the appeal of Super Mario Brothers, you know, what's this thing that these kids are into? I just don't understand it. And then they got fixated on just a couple little things. Like, they're like, oh, okay, we understand Yoshi. He's a dinosaur from Mario World. So they got fixated on dinosaurs. Oh, this place is called the Mushroom Kingdom. Okay, I'm going to fixate on the word mushroom. And everything's going to be all about fungus. And so we got dinosaurs and fungus. And that just sort of dominated the entire movie, which was nuts.
Now, do you think that, like, back in the day, our parents took us to this and were like, you know, I don't know. He probably understands it better than I do.
I think probably. But the fact is, no, we didn't. We didn't know what the heck we were seeing.
No, it didn't make sense back then. Nonsense. I think it makes even less sense now.
It makes a little more sense to me now. I mean, back then, when I first saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely abhorrent. It is nothing like Mario. I can't stand this thing. You know, these days I can appreciate it a little bit in other regards. It's still no masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I can see the good in it too, and I can see it there, you know, still trying to do some things with the property that will resonate with fans. But one of the things that, you know, really bothers me about the movie is its portrayal of Mario. And I know there's something else I bring up in our commentary is just over and over again, how so freaking angry he is. He's like the angriest person in Brooklyn.
He really is. He's like, oh, I'm going to murder them.
He does. He like threatens to murder people and break every bone in their body. And, you know, he's like trying to beat people to death with wrenches.
The whole movie, really.
I mean, granted, everybody in that movie is pretty much like that. You know, everybody in the city is angry and bitter and, you know, just trying to, you know, electrocute people and stab people for no reason. And there's just apparently, you know, some 50-year-old weathered skeleton, you know, attached to the front of a car because someone ran someone over with their cyberpunk car 50 years ago and couldn't be bothered to clean off the body. Just ridiculous. Just, you know, death and murder and decay everywhere. And Mario's right there with it. The only two people that don't seem to be, you know, totally angry are Luigi and Daisy, and then I guess Iggy and Spike for some reason.
And maybe Toad?
Yeah, I guess Toad's not angry. Maybe he's not angry enough, really. I mean, given his haircut, he probably should be really angry.
Yeah, and let's talk about the haircuts for just a moment. That movie has some of the oddest haircuts I've ever seen in a motion picture in my life.
Yes, it does. And one thing that I had never really picked up on before is the female villain, you know, King Koopa's consort, how she changes her hair literally every scene. I mean, I feel like they must have spent like a third of their budget just on her hairdresser.
Seriously. And I wonder if like the continuity guy was just like, you know, I can't remember what her hair looked like in this scene, so let's just change it for the next one.
I feel like they did on purpose. Like it was some sort of, you know, quiet little in-joke. Yeah, let's just change her hair every single scene. We'll see if anybody notices. And of course, for 25 years, I did not notice. So I do appreciate you pointing that out to me.
I mean, honestly, that was the first time I'd seen it too. Bizarro.
So obviously there are a lot of ways that this could have been better. But what are the things that you think went right in this movie? What are the things that are good and enjoyable about it? What's your takeaway in that regard?
Well, there was a Bob-omb.
There was a Bob-omb. There was also a Bullet Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not really the Bullet Bill that I know, and it actually seemed extraordinarily ineffective. Considering how many Bullet Bills have killed me in the original Super Mario Brothers, you'd have thought it would have done more than just, you know, knock Koopa back a little bit, but whatever. But yeah, it was nice that they actually did put those things in there. They looked more or less like they were supposed to.
Bob-omb was wearing Reebok shoes. I don't know.
He was. That I don't think was in the game, but maybe I'm just forgetting something. No, I'm pretty sure I'm not. Yeah, that is the most egregious product placement I think I have ever seen in a movie. That was ridiculous.
I can't think of anything else that I really feel like the movie did right. I mean, I guess maybe the plumbers using their plumbing skills.
I did like that. I mean, back then, you know, the plumber thing was a lot more important.
Yep.
It was very canonical. Nintendo hadn't said, oh, they're not plumbers anymore, and then backpedaled on that like they did in recent years. So, you know, the plumber thing was very crucial. And since it's kind of been, you know, pushed into the background in recent years, it is nice to go back. It's like, oh, yeah, that's when they were definitely plumbers from Brooklyn. And it is cool they incorporate that aspect. And as you alluded to earlier, they do eventually get their, you know, trademark colors, the plumber's outfits, the red and the green. And they look, you know, pretty decent, you know, for movie outfits, for making something that's practical and looks good on the screen. They actually had pretty good outfits, I would say.
Yeah, you know, it can't ever just be like a one-to-one, but it worked right. Pretty well, I think.
Yeah, it did. It did. One thing I really liked about the movie is that Luigi is treated really, really well. He got like more respect in that movie than he has in pretty much any of his games since then.
That's true.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic now that I think about it that in recent years, Luigi has been known for the Luigi death stare, when in that movie, he's the only person who's like not giving a death stare constantly.
That is ironic.
But I love the fact that he is, you know, kind of the protagonist. He is kind of the hero, almost more than Mario is. He's the one who ends up with the princess, yep. Sort of. He's the one that, you know, stops the worlds from getting merged together. And, you know, he's the one, you know, flying around in the jump boots. It's not Mario at the end who, you know, has the super jumping ability. It's Luigi, which, you know, I guess, you know, back then, given Super Mario Brothers 2, maybe that does make sense in that context, too. But, you know, he really got to shine in that movie. It really was Super Mario Brothers. They were both in there and they both had a lot to do. And Luigi was the younger and more compassionate one. Oh, and he had good set of abs, too. Remember that scene where he was running around shirtless in the desert?
Yeah. I still can't believe Luigi doesn't have a mustache in the movie.
That is weird. That is pretty weird. I mean, that's like, you know, sort of their trademark thing. They have mustaches. Now, so that is definitely a weird choice.
Now, Bob Hoskins' mustache is good enough for both of them, really. But
that's a very good point. He had enough mustache to go around. And then there was Vinyl Tie Cop, who also had a very sweet mustache.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Luigi should have just pulled that mustache right off of that dude and put it on himself. That would have been good. That's how it should have ended.
How did you feel about Dennis Hopper as Bowser? Or King Koopa, I guess, as it were.
I mean, just having a human Bowser, a human Koopa, from the start is very problematic. I mean, I'm sure he did as well as he possibly could do, but I don't think there's, like, anybody that could have been in that role and had it work.
No.
Because no matter what you're doing, you are a guy pretending to be a T-Rex / spiky turtle thing. And, you know, in a way, it's kind of like, you know, watching The Lion King on Broadway. Not that this is The Lion King on Broadway, but, you know, it's clearly, you know, people just pretending to be animals. And, you know, we are supposed to be looking at, you know, crazy, monstrous, fantastical creatures. This should have been a fantasy-type movie with stuff in there like that, but it doesn't have it.
Yeah. I haven't seen such a waste of talent since Raul Julia in Street Fighter.
Which brings up a very good question. Which movie is worse, Street Fighter or Super Mario Brothers?
Ooh, I don't even know if I want to know the answer to that.
Well, I don't have an answer for you either. I have not seen Street Fighter in a long, long, long time. It's only been 5 years since I had seen Super Mario Brothers, but I don't think I've seen Street Fighter since it first came out. So, you know, maybe we'll have to check that one out sometime. For now, though, I guess it's just something to think about.
Yeah, food for thought.
Two other things I did like about the movie, just to, you know, focus on some positive aspects. As I pointed out when we were watching it, it did introduce me to the song Walk the Dinosaur, which I've gone on to enjoy quite a bit. even their version, which is apparently sung by the Goombas, which is very bizarre.
Hmm. Wow.
And it had a quality monkey. It had a monkey in it. You know, if you don't know what else to do and you need a good laugh, throw in a monkey. It'll yep. work almost every time.
It's true. It's true. You can almost like correlate the signs of bad movies and the fact that they add one monkey into it.
Yes. And of course, I don't know if this is good or bad, but the fact that they seem to be actually using Super Scope 6s as their weapons throughout the movie, or, you know, like in the last 20, 15 minutes or whatever. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
Well, I think there was definitely an intentional move to not show any like real gunfire in the movie.
That does seem true. I don't think there's ever any actual bullets fired. It's all, flamethrowers and bombs and crazy-looking electric beams. Yes, the Super Scope 6 firing out the devolution blasts.
There is something kind of funny about that.
Whether it's intentionally funny, I don't really know. Anyway, in conclusion, after seeing this movie again after 25 years, it's still pretty darn bad.
Now, do you shelf it or do you bury it?
I'll shelf it. It is still worth digging out once in a while. Like I said, it does actually have some good points to it. There are some people out there, and they seem to, really actually like this movie. That I can't understand one bit. I can only really like it ironically and for these, handful of things and, seeing the nods to the characters and the outfits and things like that. I'm like, okay, I can appreciate that. But is it actually a good movie that I'll want to return to very often? No, it's not, I'm afraid.
I'd like to know what Miyamoto did with his free copy that he got.
Very good question. Used as a coaster.
Chucked it into a river.
Threw it in a river. Burned it. Launched it in outer space. Buried it somewhere in the Nevada desert with ET cartridges. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I could just imagine his face watching the movie. and I can't imagine him enjoying that.
Yeah, I have to say, this is probably one of the reasons that Nintendo, sort of has gone away from all of that stuff. I mean, after that, they became very protective of all their IPs. I really think they did not like giving up the rights to their characters like that. And when they saw what it turned into, it's like, nope, never again.
Right. And honestly, maybe that was a good thing. Maybe this was kind of the thing that had to happen to make it so that we didn't get 20 years of mediocrity.
Maybe. I mean, we'll see. I mean, we still got, some pretty crappy cartoons in the interim. I mean, don't make me think about that DK coconut crystals or whatever it's called again. I'm trying to block that from my memory. But, I would have preferred that they, had done something with their characters more than they had over the last, 15, 20 years especially. But who knows? Maybe you're right. Maybe it would have just been nothing but absolute mediocrity for the last 25 years if this hadn't happened. Who knows?
Never know.
Okay, well, I guess that does it for our discussion of the Super Mario Brothers live-action movie. As I mentioned, it is the 25th anniversary on May 28th. So if you are in the mood to watch a pretty bad movie featuring your favorite game characters, by all means, check it out and celebrate this anniversary.
Can we not watch this one again in 25 years?
We'll see. In 25 years, I might be up for it again.
Please, God, no.
Anyway, with that said, I do believe it is time to wrap up this episode of the podcast. But before we do so, we have time for one more thing.
And what's that?
And that is a dramatic reading.
Nice. What we got this week?
This time is from the pages of Nintendo Power Volume 3. Oh, it's another movie-related topic. This is the video shorts preview of the NES version of Platoon. Now there is a video game based on the Oscar-winning movie. It will take all you've got just to survive with your sanity intact. There are four stages to complete in the Asian jungle. In stage one, your platoon must find explosives and locate and blow up a strategically placed bridge, which is vital to the enemy's success. You have five members in your group during this phase, and each one can take up to four hits. However, the enemy is sometimes known to carry medical supplies, and a recovered medic kit can cure a hit. But the thick jungle is dangerous and confusing. Make a map, man. It's the only way. Stage 2 takes place in underground tunnels where enemies wait in ambush. Here you must find flares and a compass for upcoming battles. In Stage 3, you must simply survive the night in your foxhole. In Stage 4, you find a traitor in your midst.
What? That's it?
That's it.
Wow, what a
cliffhanger. It's a very matter-of-fact preview, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't even know there were four stages.
Well, I have never played past, like, you know, the third screen in stage one. But then again, you know, I never owned the game, and I have obviously not played very much of it. But I don't remember it being particularly good.
Yeah, I don't either. I think my particular favorite part was the survive in Asian forest.
Is there a reason they can't say Vietnam?
Yeah, or just like any forest in somewhere besides just Asia. That's a large area.
Yeah, the weird thing about this, though, is not necessarily this preview. It's just the fact that a game based on Platoon existed.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you make a video game based on a serious R-rated anti-war movie? Like, it's, you know, such a complete opposite of what the movie is about, really. And you know, I'm sure Oliver Stone's like, oh yeah, turning into a, you know, shoot 'em up video game. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, let's do it. It's so weird. I wonder how many games there are based off of, like, Oscar-winning movies.
Well, there probably aren't that many. And, you know, judging by how Platoon turned out here, you know, that's probably for the best.
No kidding.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Good night, Chris.
And the other Aegis, Mithra.
What would you do without me?
We will see you next time.